Hey, it's game week here on the Rebel Room. I'm Ray Brewer alongside Mike Grimala, and this is the Las Vegas Suns UNLV Sports Podcast. And, you know, expecting a full college football season this year, Mike, and the Rebels Thursday take on Eastern Washington at Allegiant Stadium in the home opener. As many fans as possible could be there. And if you think the Rebels are only going to win 1.5 games like Las Vegas sportsbooks, this could be that one. A lot of mystery around the team. Don't know who the quarterback's going to be. Don't know how they're going to look and feel. We sense they'll be better than 0-6 last year. Mike, what do you know? What can you tell us? What can we expect?
Well, I think the first thing you can expect is fans. Like, that's going to be even before the game starts. That's the first thing that's going to be different. There's going to be people in the stands. I think that's going to make something of a difference this year for the players. At least that's what they've said. They're looking forward to it. After that, you know, once the coin flip happens and they kick off, not really sure what to expect. Like you said, we don't know who the quarterback is going to be. We don't know what the offense is going to look like. We don't know what kind of defense they're going to have. You know, the few players who we thought were sure things on defense have been moved to new positions. So that's all up in the air. So I don't know. 0-6 last year. They're projected to win one or two games this year. We're just going to have to wait and see what happens on Thursday.
What are the chances that they just come out and completely destroy Eastern Washington, right? They're from the Big Sky, Eastern Washington, a very good program, year in and year out, compete for the Big Sky. They've gone in and beaten some D1 teams over the years. But what are the chances that UNLV's finally clicking, that this is the team, they're going to break through, and they just win the game in convincing fashion? They push them around up front. Charles Williams goes off. Whoever the quarterback is, say Justin Rogers, has a few touchdown passes to Kyle Rogers. And next thing you know, the Rebels are up 35-8, 35-9, and they're putting in the third string punter.
Now, I am not an expert on Eastern Washington. I'm reading up on them and trying to learn as much as I can about them leading up to that game. But the scenario you just presented where one team sort of pulls away for a comfortable win, I could see Eastern Washington winning comfortably more than I could envision that happening for UNLV, just because Eastern Washington is a team that scored 40 points a game last year. They've got a returning quarterback who is their conference's player of the year. Like, they're set. They know what they're doing. They're going to hit the field on Thursday, and they know what plays they're running. They know what their overall strategy is. They know who their good players are. They know how to use everyone. Like, they know what they're doing.
Yeah, they had the benefit of playing in the spring as well, because the Big Sky had a truncated spring season. And I guess when you look at the history of UNLV football against these Big Sky teams, right, lost at home to Southern Utah, lost at home to Northern Arizona. Okay, beat up pretty good on Northern Colorado, beat up pretty good on Idaho State. And, of course, you had the Howard loss, not part of the Big Sky. But UNLV is essentially 2-3 in these games against lower opponents at the first half of the season. And when you factor in that Eastern Washington's not just a typical lower-tier team, and there's just so much mystery surrounding the Rebels. But can I make a confession?
Yes.
So the last time we taped a podcast, it was around media day, and the Rebels were picked to finish, you know, beneath my Chaparral Cowboys in the Mountain West. Mm-hmm. And I was down. I had them being, you know, a one-win team. And, yeah, I was panicked. I didn't see any way where this team that went 0-6 last year, granted with the gigantic asterisk of the COVID season and all the players that they didn't have, I didn't see how this defense or this unproven offense with the quarterback that's got absolutely no experience could win more than a game or two. But now, you know, as the days have gone on, and you know I'm a homer, right? That's what you love about me. I'm thinking, if they don't win three games, I mean, come on. How could you not win three games, Grimala? Why can't you compete for six?
Here's what I would say. As much as I can distill it down, UNLV is, until proven otherwise, this is the type of team that you go into any given week, they could play three quarterbacks. There are three quarterbacks who could get into the game and went, like, because there's just so much uncertainty. None of those guys are experienced. None of them have proven anything. The training camp hasn't settled anything on who the starter is. No one has claimed the job. You go into any given week, it could be Brumfield starting the game. He's bad. He gets pulled. Rogers goes in. He's bad. He gets pulled. Martell gets a shot. That could happen. And when are those teams that are just cycling through quarterbacks, when are those teams ever good?
Yeah. The old adage is, if you're playing more than one quarterback, that's because you really don't have one quarterback. And, you know, in my heart of hearts, I'm massively intrigued by Tate Martell, right? I saw that, you know, it works. You had a quarterback, and I can't remember the guy's name, the quarterback at San Jose State, who was one of these guys who was at some major programs, came from Arkansas, and he just came into the Mountain West and he tore up the league. So why can't Tate Martell, who in garbage time 3 years ago with Ohio State dominated like Rutgers and Miami of Ohio for Ohio State, why can't he have the same impact here? And don't tell me because UNLV's offensive line isn't as good as Ohio State's third string offensive line.
We don't know. It's hard for me to, I can give you a like broad stroke, the quarterback position and what it means for this team and like how like the situation, but in terms of the individual players, I don't know when you say why can't Martell work? I can't argue against you, but I also can't argue for you just because we haven't seen him.
And that was the one thing that, you know, even if you want to give last year a pass because of the pandemic, there's a few things that I could not figure out, man. Just, you know, the
Max Gillum getting every snap.
That obviously leads the list considering the guy was in his last year of eligibility, but they were just so untalented on offense that they couldn't do anything. So I don't know what this new UNLV staff, I say this as we go into year two, I don't know what they want to do offensively. You don't know what they want to do because they couldn't do it last year. You know, they didn't have the guys to get it done. They didn't have the Jimmies and the Joes.
So if you want me to say how could it, let's say everything comes together and their offensive line is improved and Charles Williams is back. He bounces back. He was not good last year, but say he bounces back to, you know, his 2019 levels when he was all Mountain West and he's playing great. And they do settle on a quarterback. One of these three guys actually plays well and claims the job and they're the starter going forward. And they actually get a good season out of that guy. Could I see them winning a few games on the back of their offense, you know, maybe coming through? Yeah, I guess I could see them if they can somehow find a way to win this Eastern Washington game and then things solidify from there. I could see it.
I can't say
whether Tate Martell has a better shot than any of the other guys on the roster of becoming that guy.
Okay, but before I ask you about the defense, because they've got some transfers in there that some people feel could be impactful, do you think, what are the odds? We're in a gambling city that UNLV goes to a bowl game.
Almost none, almost nothing. Okay. Zero.
I mean, but we see this all the time in college football where a team that had zero expectations somehow pieces together a magical run. We've even seen it at UNLV, Caleb Herring, right? Getting UNLV to the heart of Dallas Bowl, you know, some late magic in some games. I mean, the thing that I think sucks for UNLV is they try to build momentum and get people to Allegiant Stadium, not just the one time on the $10 ticket to see the stadium, but to come week in and week out to support the team, is you got to give them a product that has a chance to be competitive and win. Nobody wants to go show up and see UNLV get completely destroyed, right?
Yeah.
And,
yes,
you know, I understand them getting destroyed September 17th against Iowa State, you know, arguably the best team in the Big 12, a top 10 team nationally. But in those other games, I would like to think that you've got the second highest paid coach in the league, right? You've got the best facilities in the league. You've got arguably the best city in the league. I sure know it's better than Reno, and I know it's better than Laramie, and it beats Fresno, right? You've been in Fresno before.
Mm-hmm.
It's a dog pit. Reno is an absolute dog pit. Like, how every year does UNLV only win one or two games? Why can't they win?
Yeah, you've broadened up the scope of the conversation. But going back to how you started this point was, you know, what – you know, you compared it to the Caleb Herring team and, like, you know, why can't they, you know, the odds are zero, but why can't they have a surprise season? Why can't they be the team? And I think we talked about that a little bit on the last podcast when sort of framed it as, you know, could UNLV have a miracle season where everything goes right? And the thing I would say is that I can't see the path to that. Like, if you'd have to explain to me how that miracle, like the mechanics of that miracle, like, are they going to be a great defensive team just out of nowhere, and they're just going to wreck people's offensive line and sack the quarterback a million times and lead the conference in sacks? And are they going to win that way? Is that going to, like, or are they going to come out and just a Royals offense is going to completely click in year two, and they're going to throw for 40 touchdowns, and, you know, Charles Williams is going to run for 50? Like, you've got to sort of explain to me how this miracle is going to happen, because I just don't see, like, I guess I don't even see the potential for that to be the case. Like, I'm not seeing any areas where, even if things go, like, absolutely right, I'm not seeing how that's good enough to win six games, but maybe I'm missing it.
Who's got the best running back in the Mountain West?
You know, Charles Williams was all conference 2 years ago. I don't know what happened last year.
What happened was everybody in America knew he was running the ball because they had no quarterback or no wide receivers.
Yeah, I'm sure that factored into it. I personally didn't think that he looked fast or quick. I didn't think he looked as good last year, even when there were opportunities to gain yard. That's just me.
Okay. Arguably, who's got the best running back in the league?
Let's say
top three running back.
Fresno?
Come on.
Rivers? Fresno with Rivers, or I'm trying to think of the other guy that was all conference, but I can't remember his name. But Rivers particularly destroyed UNLV.
Okay, but you gotta only go 6-6. So who's got the best offensive lineman in the league?
That I don't know. Maybe like
Boise.
Probably Boise or like Wyoming or one of these teams that just runs the ball.
But what I'm saying is that UNLV has pieces of a good team. Now, you and I both know to be a team, you've got to be this great unit of 11 players on each side of the ball. I worry about the defense. The listeners are probably like, Brewer, you tease us with the defense and we don't even go to it. The defense was historically bad last year, and we've said that multiple times. Who are some of the guys on defense that they're going to change things? Because I know they got a few guys in that allegedly could play.
A defensive end, Connor Murphy. He's a transfer from USC. He's, you know, just a giant. He's like 6'7". He's huge. He's going to play on the edge and that sort of three-man front thing that they have.
Opposite Adam Plant, right?
Yeah. And they're hoping he can be
pretty good, at least in uniform, standing there on the field, not running or going up against anybody. Those are two impressive looking people.
Correct? Yes, those are both, you know, transfers from bigger conferences, and you know, guys who are physically upperclassmen, like ready to hold up at the point of attack. Like if you run directly at either of those guys, it's not an automatic loss for UNLV. There's a chance that those guys could win their matchup or neutral, you know, so they shouldn't be getting run over at the point of attack with those two guys. Kylan Wilborn is a transfer at linebacker, who they is going to be a starter. They expect him to be good this year. They moved Jacoby Windman inside linebacker.
And he's going to pair with Pharrell Hester, who's going to be healthy for his, was it his fifth year, I think, of eligibility?
Yeah, I don't know how they're going to line up exactly at linebacker. I know Windman is also on the inside this year.
He's so like the best defender from last year, right?
He was, you know, just rushing the passer. I don't know how much that's going to be a factor in his game this year as an inside linebacker. I talked to the defensive coordinator on Wednesday at practice, and I asked him, like, Windman was behind the line of scrimmage a lot last year in the backfield. That's what made him effective. Is he going to still be doing that this year from his new position? And they said, yeah. You know, they said that's still part of the game plan, is to try and get him into the backfield. So I don't know if he's going to lead the team in sacks like he did last year, which sort of makes me question the move. But
on paper, they're not a one-win team. I think with Williams and Garcia and Plant and Murphy and Windham, those are like seven legit guys who've played who've either been in a bigger conference or have played a lot of football. Hester, you know, the secondary still could be a disaster. But I just, you know, in trying to find a pathway to not being 0-12, you know, because I'll be honest, if they go 0-12, bro, that new AD is going to have a decision.
If they go 0-12, it's bad. You're starting at scratch again. You're going to have a new athletic director. You're going to have a new football coach. You're going to have a new system. You're going to have a new recruiting philosophy. You're going to have new everything, because Arroyo is not going to survive 0-6 and 0-12. So Correct. It's like they've got to win, you know, something this year. And when you say like they're more than a one-win team, and you're saying like what's their path to being like a surprise bowl contender, I'm more on the side of like what's their path to two wins. Like, if you give them Eastern Washington, which is probably a toss-up according to the prognosticators, what's the other win, and like how does that happen? And I keep coming back to the quarterback, whereas like you mentioned, yeah, they've got good players here, they've got interesting matchups at this position and that position and here, but okay, let me gets you into a close game, like what quarterback is going to win that close game for you, or play a flawless, you know, no turnover game and complete the big third downs and get you in position to win that game? Like, who on the roster is going to do that at quarterback?
I mean, they've got 4-star quarterbacks who were extremely accomplished in high school in Rodgers and Martell.
And they've got combined, what, 6 years of college experience and combined 20-something pass attempts. Like, these guys who have no college experience.
Well,
still.
There you go, Grimal. Taking a look at the glass half empty.
I know. I'm not trying to come in so negative.
But looking at the schedule real fast, Thursday's a must win because they're not winning at ASU. They're not beating Iowa State here. And the game at Fresno, for all intents and purposes, is an Elski as well, right?
Probably there will be heavy underdogs in all of those games.
Okay, so now they're 1-3. They got to go to UT San Antonio. Great program for their level. Kind of another must win. But then you go back-to-back at home, Utah State, San Jose State. I know San Jose is the defending league champs, but it's still San Jose State. Utah State's in a rebuild. I mean, those are two games you could be competitive. Lose at Reno, but then come win at New Mexico, Hawaii in your yard. I don't know, man. I don't know. You're right. I'm having a hard time counting to six.
No, I'm looking at, you know, if you mentioned, you know, you come back, you get those home games, San Jose State, Utah State at home is especially – once you get past Eastern Washington, that is the game that I would probably target as, what is that week? That's their fifth game, six. That's your sixth game of the season. You're at the midway point. You get through non-conference. You've got to, I would circle that game right now as you have to know who your quarterback is by then. You have to know what sort of offensive system you're running by then. You have to have your defense locked in by it. So like, play with those first game, those first five games, play with them as much as you want, rotate guys in and out, use that as extended training camp, whatever. We know Arroyo last year said, you know, that six game season was extended spring practice, whatever, do that again. You've got to have it all figured out by Utah State because that's probably your next best chance at getting that win. So if you want to take those first 5 weeks to get things locked in and get in sync, whatever you do, just be ready to play and know what your game plan is going to be coming into that week six against Utah State at home.
Yeah, you're right. It's going to be obviously tough sledding, but if we're sitting here in week six talking about who the quarterback's going to be, then I would say that's pretty unsuccessful of a season. You know what I mean?
Do you think that Arroyo is do you think he's capable, or do you expect him to make an early decision on quarterback and just say this is the guy and slam the door and like this is what we're going to be all year? I ask because he has, like, all offseason he's been very coy about it, through spring ball to now, hasn't named the starter, hasn't let any of the quarterbacks talk to the media during training camp. They've been very secretive about it. But last year was the opposite. He made Max Gillum the starting quarterback and did not move off that for the entire season, no matter how bad he played, no matter how bad the team was, no matter how much they needed to see reps from those other guys. He stuck with Max Gillum the entire season. So could you see him picking one guy early in the year and sticking with him for 12 games?
Yeah, but which guy is he going to pick?
I don't know. But
because UNLV, Mike, as you know, has a history of quarterbacks getting injured, and when your offensive line isn't that good, that adds to the probability. So I think you got to have two that are semi-capable. I project Rogers/Martell to be the quarterbacks, and even though I think Brumfield's looked the best, maybe he falls off and transfers out and goes to like the Big Sky and has a great career.
It's funny you mentioned those two guys because I think Brumfield is going to get the start in week one. So it's like already we're split on, you mentioned the other two. I'm taking Brumfield, like, is going to get the start. So it's already, that just shows you how little we know about that position and what's going to happen. But I would be interested to see, like, I do think it's, I can make a case either way. Do you want them to pick one guy and stick with him, or do you want to see all of them play? Like, would you get on board if, like, all three of them get starts throughout the season and they all get their shot? Or do you want them to see them ride with one guy, no matter who it is?
I think they just need to pick a guy like every other team in America and play that player. I mean, the bottom line is Arroyo is essentially fighting for his career, right? He needs to show that. I mean, right now, if he were to lose the UNLV job, obviously he's, you know, they're going to owe him a crate full of money. But would you even want the guy to be the OC of your program with the way the UNLV offense has looked and his inability to make a decision on personnel?
I would say that absolute worst case, like the nuclear option, the worst case scenario, if they go 0-12 this year and his resume as a head coach is 0-18 and fired after 2 years, it's probably going to be a long, long time before he gets another head coaching opportunity. So yeah, from that perspective, and the worst case scenario, they've absolutely got to win one game. So going back to that quarterback thing, I would say again, if you don't win week one, if you lose to Eastern Washington, you have to get it figured out and pick one quarterback and make him the guy before that Utah State game, which is your next chance to win probably. Yeah. But yeah, it's Arroyo's looking at that worst case scenario. It may not be very likely, but it's still on the table. And that's got to sit with him in some way, at least.
Yeah, I mean, I would think though that UNLV probably doesn't have the money to pay him and another staff. So I think he's safe regardless. But he sure had some troubles. And again, COVID, for all we know, this guy could be the real deal. And all credit to Desiree for bringing him to Vegas. And because of COVID, we just haven't had the chance to see it. And sorry, I'm eating some fruit snacks, Grimaldo.
I don't buy into the COVID thing, because I saw plenty of other teams last year play during COVID and they all managed to win games. So I'm not willing to use that as an excuse.
Such as who?
Every other team in the Mountain West. So, yeah, but it's a little different. It was a little different because it was.
And 80% of your roster is the other guy's roster. You don't get as much time with them because of the pandemic. You got guys who fall off, and then you're expected to go out there and play a game.
Even if it was his first year, so that does exacerbate the issue a little bit. But I still want to see them win a game. And I would like to see them win multiple games this year to show some sort of improvement and give them a springboard into year three. But I don't know. It's tough to get a feel for. I guess the main point it's tough to get a feel for what this team is going to be, because we don't know who the quarterback is, and we didn't see we didn't get a real look at them last season, even to get a feel for what the offense is going to be, what type of plays they want to run. I think I know that they want to be like a wide receiver screen, get the ball in space.
The worst play in football is the wide receiver screen.
It's great if you're throwing it to a four-star receiver and he's trying to be tackled by a two-star cornerback, and then you can just push that cornerback out of the way and run for 15 yards. It's great then. And I think that's what they're trying to do here, is just out recruit everyone else in the Mountain West and then just run, you know, a basic offense that where they can just overpower everyone. It might take a couple of years for that to come to fruition, but I think they want to be a space team where we just get you out in space and we have better athletes and we're going to win those matchups. I think I don't know for sure, because I don't think we saw a cohesive offense last year.
And I mean, to the defense of the decision-making process. I mean, UNLV isn't the only team in the nation that is unsettled on the quarterback spot. I mean, you look like Texas UT is, what, a top 15 program in the AP poll. And, you know, Sarkisian came out today and said he basically has got no clue who's going to play for him at quarterback. You know what I'm saying? You know, I mean, now granted, though, he's choosing between, like, all world guys, you know what I'm saying, versus UNLV that's choosing between some unproven commodities.
True. It's not uncommon to have a quarterback battle. Like, that's totally fine. I think the thing that would be concerning about this quarterback battle is just how little we know about any of the guys competing for it. So that's what I would say. I wanted to ask you, maybe moving off the on-field stuff, the Pac-12 just announced today as we're recording this that they are not going to expand. And I know some people were thinking that UNLV might be angling for a spot in the Pac-12, but they're not going to expand, it sounds like. What do you think?
I've always said that UNLV should call BYU and they should go to the Big 12 together.
Wait, say that again?
UNLV. I've always thought that UNLV and BYU should get together and go to the Big 12.
What is your confidence level that when this is all said and done, all this realignment that's going to happen over the next like 24 months, what's your confidence level that when it's all done, UNLV is going to be in a better position than it is now?
Well, I would say two things. One, they're losing some time here because this is an important jockeying month or two, and they don't have somebody to move the chips around, correct?
They have no athletic director. Well, they have an interim athletic director, and they have a president who is a first-time university president who's been on the job for like a month now.
Yeah. Yeah. So they've got but they got a lot working for them, and that Las Vegas has really become a destination city, especially with Allegiant Stadium. You just saw LSU and USC are going to play here in a few years. A Pro Bowl is going to be here. The Super Bowl certainly come here. UNLV's got the great Thomas and Mack Center. The university is, you know, scoring a lot of high marks in certain categories and has some accomplished programs. I just think if, you know, the Big 12 is trying to solidify itself as a league that's viable, because, you know, you see, you know, Texas and Oklahoma moving out. Those are the two, you know, marquee programs of your league. Who are you going to get to replace them? You know, and that's where I think UNLV is an attractive option. It's a brand that's known. So, you know, would it be the end of the world if they stayed in the Mountain West? Certainly not for football and basketball. They've always kind of done their own thing anyways, right? They were in the PCAA and the Big West during the glory years. So
basketball can schedule non-conference, and they can get opponents and do it that way. So I think they'll be good there, as you're saying.
So yeah, how would you go ahead?
Sorry. I was going to say, you think they'll be fine in the Mountain West. What if it's a Mountain West where Boise State and San Diego State are gone to some other conference, and you're left with, you know, what's left of the Mountain West without their best programs? That would be my main concern, is that if UNLV just ends up doing nothing and the Mountain West drops down from a good group of five conference to, you know, now it's just a low major conference. And
yeah, I'm not a big Boise fan. I know that obviously they've had their Fiesta Bowl successes, but if outside of what they've done in football, you know, if you put Boise just in a regular conference, they just would be an average team. Of course, if you put UNLV in a regular conference, they'd be even worse than what they are. But I would find it hard to believe that. I mean, I could see Boise for football going over to the Big 12, especially since Idaho is kind of, I guess, closer to those schools than Las Vegas. But I don't know why. I mean, yeah, and I guess San Diego State to get in that California media market, I could see them being picked over UNLV as well, to be honest with you.
Yeah. So your perfect season is UNLV goes 6-6. They surprise everyone. Tate Martell is the newcomer of the year for the Mountain West. And then UNLV joins hands with BYU and they go to the Big 12. That's your dream season.
Sure. And who knows if BYU even wants to leave its independent status, but I haven't called them yet. Yeah.
Well,
that's kind of the good of the good, brother.
So coming into the podcast, you said that you had talked yourself into it. Your confidence had come up. You were excited for the season. I feel like I was the negative one today. Did I put a dent in that inadvertently, or are you still pumped for the for Thursday and the start of the season?
I'm pumped. I think the one thing is that just the unknowns are driving me crazy. You know, I'd like to be able to talk about a quarterback and why that person's going to be good or bad. And I obviously can't do that.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to know a starter until game time. Like, I wouldn't expect Arroyo to come out and say anything before he has to. I think we'll just see who runs out onto the field with the first team after kickoff, and then that's when we'll know.
Yeah, I mean, my thing lastly is that if they run out there to three guys again like they did last year in the opener, people are going to start saying, okay, what gives here? Why can't you make a decision? You know, this looks too much like last year. And last year we went 0-6. And when do the Knights start playing again?
Well, here's an issue that I guess probably could, we could touch on, you know, one thing that that football coaches hate is quarterback controversy. And they hate it when the backup quarterback is popular, is a fan favorite. Do you think that it's been, you know, 3 or 4 years since Tate Martell was here at Bishop Gorman, and it's not like UNLV has the biggest fan base. Do you think this is a fan base that will clamor for Tate Martell to play, you know, if he's the backup or if he's the third stringer? Is that going to get uncomfortable for Arroyo? Like, are the fans going to push so hard for Martell that it becomes a distraction?
I mean, I could also say if they put Martell in and he's awful, the Gorman hate around town would be compounded, and, you know, they would be urging for him to get out of the job. So I think Tate is just such a
– just polarizing either way.
Yeah. So I don't think you win or lose either way. What I'd love to see happen is Brumfield or Rogers or Martell – gets the start and has a great first half against Eastern Washington. UNLV goes on some scoring drives, and it's like, okay, this is so-and-so's team. We don't need to worry about putting the other guy in. You know, we want it to where Doug Brumfield and Justin Rogers are in the portal by this time next week. Okay?
I'll add that to the checklist of the dream season for you.
Yeah, so – all right. Well, Mike, looking forward to your coverage on Thursday, and shout out to all of our loyal listeners. We love the interaction on social media, and Mike is going to be at all the road games this year, win, lose, or draw. So definitely give him some questions if you want them answered along the way. For Michael, I am Raymond, and we'll talk to you soon.